Hello, Internet. It's Brodigan, and welcome to another In Your Mama's Face edition of the Every Joe Podcast, hashtag EJPC, your political safe space. We brought out the big guns for this week's episode, since we're going to be talking about big guns and the Second Amendment, what with the Obama administration spending most of the past 8 years trying to do away with the Second Amendment. So we figured we should discuss it, since what the heck, it's an election year. And we have two experts on the on the matter. First, we've got the host from the NRA News' Cam and Company. He's the Cam in Cam and Company, Cam Edwards. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir. It's good to be here.
And from the ironically titled Louder with Crowder, louderwithcrowder.com, and my boss from my other one of my other ventures, Stephen Crowder. Welcome.
What's ironic about Louder with Crowder? What's ironic about Louder? Okay. Is that I don't speak that loudly in real life?
Yes, and in real life, you're actually as quiet as a church mouse.
Okay, all right.
So, actually, it was actually originally I was bringing you guys on to talk about the two specific issues that you've been involved with recently. But sure. This morning, we all there was an article out. We had it on Crowder's site, and Cam, I'm sure you probably spoke about it, or if not you, the NRA News brought it up. Lead singer of the band Eagles of Death Metal, which was the band that was playing on stage during the Paris attack by the Islamic extremists in France. And he was talking about gun rights, but like uncontrollable sobbing. And to me, this stood out this morning, because generally speaking, when you see someone crying over something involving with guns, they're anti-gun. It's like, oh my God, where are the laws that prevented this from happening? And here you had someone crying because why are these laws preventing us from protecting ourselves from this happening? And I just wanted to get both of yours take on that. I guess Cam will start with you.
Sure. What's interesting is, so I saw this story from a link from NBC News, which didn't say anything about how emotional Jesse Hughes was when he was talking about this. It was just sort of, they described him as a gun rights advocate who has argued for unfettered access to guns in the past. You click the link, you watch the video, and as you say, you know, here's a guy who is very much still wrestling with what happened in Paris and seeing people die right in front of him. And his reaction was not, no, we need to ban all the guns. His reaction was, I want to be able to protect myself. And as he said, you know, he said it was brave men who charged towards the danger armed with guns who put a stop to that attack. That is an undeniable fact. You know, I think it's going to be interesting seeing going forward how much the mainstream media is willing to actually talk about what Jesse Hughes had to say and to put him on the same level as you say, individuals who have been victims of a violent crime, who have come to a different conclusion, who have said, you know what, I support more gun control now. Are each of these opinions going to be equally valid in the eyes of the media?
Yeah, because this is what's interesting is that, I mean, this isn't, generally speaking, the media will try and dismiss it as like, oh, well, it's Ted Nugent, or it's Rush Limbaugh, or these radical right-wing extremists, as opposed to the lead singer of a heavy metal band who was performing in Paris, and, you know, he wasn't screaming at the top of his lungs like Nugent was. He was visibly distraught over what happened.
Yeah, there was a lot of vulnerability, and well, you know, because we work together on certain ventures. I think Louder with Crowder, not to brag, we sort of set the tone on a lot of these issues, because like Cam said, it just sort of came out, singer talks about Paris attack, supports gun control. And Louder with Crowder was the first site to cover it this morning, where I wrote, well, hold on a second, this is really important, because it's not a bumper sticker that says, touch my guns at your own peril. Or, you know, I'm going to shoot my second car is a shotgun. You know, it wasn't that. This was a really vulnerable guy. You know, the left, they show Moms Against Action. They trot out Code Pink. On the right, they trot out Chris Kyle, and they act as though they're too tough. And they none of this bothers them. It's just water off a duck's back. And so we wrote about that. I think it's like Cam said, a lot of people missed that early in the morning when this newsletter went out. And I think that's why it's a big story. I think people are saying, wow, this is a guy who was part of a death metal band, who was there, who by all expectations should have given the stock answer. We need to cut back on gun control. And somebody, please think of the children. So it's, I think it's important for conservatives and people who are, or not even conservatives, just Second Amendment activists, people who believe in the right to self-preservation, to have stories like this where they can point to it and say, actually, see, we care just as much. We've just come to a different solution. And then you can actually prove that our solutions are viable. And I think that's what's so important with a story like this. But I'm just a comic with a website who is ironically not louder. By the way, you said to bring all my guns. I brought them here. I don't know when we're going to be showing them, but
would you like to show it off right now,
Greg? I will. I think this thing is a Smith & Wesson 357-581. I picked that up for like $500. Cam might know. He's an NRA guy. That's a steal. You know why? Because the cylinder – here, I guess I should show you. It's not loaded. The cylinder release was just a little bit loose. So I said, listen, if you keep it at that price, I will buy it. But allow me to take it to a gunsmith because I think I have a hunch as to what's wrong with it. And I knew if it was fixed, it would like double in price. So I could sell that for like twice what I paid for it. This is my pride and joy right here. It's like an unfired Smith & Wesson 581. Come on. Look at that.
That's awesome. Although I believe some GQ writer just described that as a Taurus or maybe a 45 ACP. I'm not sure.
Right. Yeah, exactly. With the clip.
Okay. Well, here's the important question. Do you have it monogrammed like the gun that Jeb Bush just tweeted out?
I don't have it monogrammed, but I'm thinking of getting this monogram because you told me. Again, Brodigan told me to bring all my guns. This is the 357 lever action that I'm pretty proud of, and it's a little cheaper with just sort of stainless steel, so I could get that. I could get this monogrammed on this side, and that would be pretty badass. Maybe I would like, I don't know, I'd have to name it something really politically incorrect. Maybe you guys can determine it. Your audience can vote and tweet me.
Well, so this is actually an awkward segue because I was about to bring up the not particularly being a gun guy myself.
You can't. You're in New York.
Exactly. That's actually one of the points I was going to make when it comes up to the video of the lead singer of the band, because like I said, you know, I think there are a lot of people like me where we're not really gun guys. It's not against guns. It's just never been an interest from it. And when you see something like that, and when you see something as, when you see like the left wanting to go as far as they can to ban guns, lie about it, you know, claim it's just like for gun safety or they just want to change one thing. I mean, Cam, you guys have seen like a complete like explosion of never before owned a gun people signing up for the NRA. I mean, A, because they're concerned about the Second Amendment, but also just because screw you to the people who are trying to take it away.
Also, you look like a terrorist. They see Brodigan and get a membership.
You know. No, I think you're fine. I think you're good. You're all right. Here's the thing. Listen, I was just in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania at the Great American Outdoor Show, which is a 9-day outdoor show. Brodigan, you would have fit right in. In fact, you would have had people saying, Brodigan, why is your beard so short? Really? What's the matter? Can't you grow a real beard? That's what they would have told you. But, you know, we are seeing people who, as you say, we've seen people who aren't gun owners. Sign up for the NRA recently. You know, I'm not exercising my right, but I reserve my right to exercise my right at some point in the future. But, you know, we're also seeing, I think, a lot of people become gun owners, become NRA members for self-defense. I mean, that's what they're thinking about. You know, they're seeing the attack in San Bernardino. They're seeing the attack in Paris. They are seeing the random nature of these attacks. You know, we do live in a time when violent crime is at 40-year lows in this country. That's great. It's also happened, by the way, while we have had more and more legal gun owners. More guns has not led to more crime, but we do still have crime out there. And there is this sort of random nature of these high-profile crimes, of these terror attacks, that I think gets people thinking, at least some people thinking, if I ever am, God forbid, in that situation, I don't want to have to run and hide. I don't want to have to beg for my life. I want to be able to have a chance to protect my life, to protect the lives of the people around me. And that's something that, frankly, I'm glad we're seeing more people think about these things.
And I was wondering if you guys see if there's maybe a little bit of a shift where, I mean, if I did things like prepare, I would have like stats and numbers in front of me. But, I mean, there seems to be, you know, the left going so far. I mean, even if you look at an issue like abortion, where the left has been going so far, you're seeing more and more people who are moving more towards the right. And you see even some little like where like a lot of millennials are more into gun ownership and, you know, being able to like defend themselves than like say like a lot of the baby boomer parents.
Right.
Who were more of like the, you know, color by numbers, left, anti-gun. And I was, is this just like, you know, sometimes people just shift, or do you think, it's because the left has gone so far to the left that it's like a correction?
I think it's all of those things, but there are measurable numbers. And I've talked about this in the program. They call it gun culture 2.0. And so I was raised in Canada. Sorry, Cam. So there was the Bowling for Columbine issue. And my producer here, not Gay Jared, didn't even know that was a film. That, you know, that was Michael Moore's big breakout. A lot of people don't remember that. That was the big thing. That was this big gun control push, right? That was the fulcrum. And absolutely. So I'm 28 years old. So I'm part of that generation where, unless your parents proactively taught you, as my parents did, that guns were a bad word. They were a naughty word. Oh my gosh, a gun, it's a bad thing. Actually, we had moral religious education in school. Public schools were Catholic schools in Quebec. And I remember they did a drill, like this sort of mental exercise, kind of like a Rorschach test, where they had a standout, like a cutout, like you'd see like a film, like a movie cutout, you know, like a Darth Vader cutout, but it was just a cutout of a kid and his hand was covered by a towel. And the mental exercise was, what could be under that? And I remember some kid said, it could be a gun. And the teacher said, yes, it could be a really bad thing, like a gun. And I got sent to the office for saying, well, a gun isn't a bad thing. And I was 7 years old. So I'm part of the generation where it was sort of unilaterally agreed upon, like, oh, guns are bad. What's happened is you had a little bit older than the baby boomers, John, and Cam can probably speak to this. I can speak sort of more culturally, but there are concrete numbers. The baby boomers and kind of older, they actually understand the Second Amendment. They believe in their Second Amendment rights. So a lot of them are gun owners or at least pro-Second Amendment. You have that gap in between. People my age who don't even understand the Second Amendment and were brainwashed to believing guns were bad. And then you have people younger, like 25 and below, who all the video games they've grown up with, it's not Donkey Kong Country, it's Call of Duty, and they're seeing accurate, you know, replicas of guns that they want to go to the range and shoot. And so even though they may not understand the Second Amendment, they want to have the right to go and shoot these super cool guns that they see in video games. So there's pro-Second Amendment, a gap of about one generation that was anti-Second Amendment, and then the next generation, the millennials, the younger millennials coming up, will probably be more Second Amendment than any generation before them. And that's something that to me is like, that's a huge winning issue. So I'm glad to see Ted Cruz talking about that with the Supreme Court right now. Gun ownership, Second Amendment is the biggest winning issue for the right, and it's the biggest losing issue for the left.
Cam, agree or disagree?
Largely agree. I do think that it is a losing issue politically. Although, you know, Michael Bloomberg is trying his best to make it the big issue for Democrats and anti-gun candidates.
Yeah, as
this year.
New Yorker, I apologize.
What's that?
As the resident New Yorker, I apologize.
Yeah, it's all right. It's all right. I understand. But
no, it's not, Cam. No, it's not, Cam. It's not, he has to learn.
All right, it's all your fault, Brodigan. Okay. But you know, you look at New Hampshire, and Hillary Clinton, I think one out of every four of her campaign ads featured an anti-gun message. She lost by 22 points. You know, this was not an issue that is resonating
to a 90-year-old socialist Jew. Let's right? be honest here.
She's trying to portray herself as, you know, look, I'm more anti-gun than Bernie Sanders. And Bernie Sanders said, no, I'm more anti-gun than Hillary Clinton. Meanwhile, you know, turnout over on the Republican side has outpaced the Democrats in both Iowa and New Hampshire. The energy, you even find a story, I think there was a story today at Bloomberg about how the energy in this issue is on the side of gun owners. There are many, many more American voters who are interested in voting to protect their rights than there are voters who are interested in taking someone else's rights away. So I think it's always going to be a loser of an issue. You know, Stephen talked about the demographic changes. Gallup has been asking this question since 1960. Should we ban handguns in the United States? In 1960, about 60% of Americans said, yes, take that gun away from Stephen. Now it's down to 1 in 4. 1 in 4 Americans say, yes, Stephen Crowder should not be allowed to own that firearm.
Well, no. Don't use me. About 4 in 4 Americans say Stephen Crowder should not have that firearm. And they say other people maybe 1 in 4.
Right.
Okay. About Crowder specifically. I mean, I would say take the gun away from Crowder, but that's not the issue here.
I would say take. I can't believe I got one.
America. Anyway, but this is – you know, this is something that has been a long time coming. And it didn't start with the election of Barack Obama. It is not that America suddenly became racist and we all want to own guns now to protect ourselves. This has been going on, as Stephen says, for a matter of generations. It is fascinating that millennials are the least likely to support a semi-auto ban. They are very supportive of concealed carry. Polls have shown that in Wisconsin and elsewhere. And this is, you know, I think of it as this is a generation that in many respects has been told you're not old enough to do things. You have to, you know, you're really not an adult at 18 or 21. These are a generation, many of whom, you know, feel like they want to be out on their own. They want to be doing more than they can. This is an area when you talk about being able to protect yourself. Look, even if you can't own your own home, even if you have, you know, crippling student debt, you're not as far along in your life as you'd like to be, you can still protect yourself. You can still learn these things. And this is something that responsible adults are known to do, right? They're known to be responsible gun owners. So I think the acclimation via video games that Stephen talked about, I think that's absolutely true, but they're taking it away from the entertainment consoles and they're actually going to the range. This is something that they want to put in practice in their real life, not so they can live out a first-person shooter fantasy, but so that they actually have that skill of being able to protect themselves if they need to.
Well, I also think, I mean, if you look at YouTube, right? If you look at YouTube and all of these sort of tactical reviews, mm-hmm. Is my sound showing up or is it not showing up for you guys? For some reason, I still keep seeing Cam. I guess for you guys, you see me. Hello. If you look on YouTube, you see all of these tactical reviews, how to clean your gun, how to best maintain your firearm, which firearm is right for you. I think it's something where in the age of everything that's – and Cam can correct. I could be completely speaking out of my rear here. I'm just sort of trying to make sense of the statistics that are undeniable, like Cam and I have agreed upon. I think it's something that is mechanical in an age of a lot of things that are digital. And you probably have a lot of young men who are going, oh, okay, this is something that I can put my hand, this is something I can customize, this is something I can work with, this is something I can clean, this is something I can fix. Oh, there's a difference between this grip and that. This, there's a difference between these sights and those sights. And I think it appeals to the basic human instinct of self-preservation and also for a lot of men of a productive hobby. I mean, it's funny, you know, you've seen cigarette use go down, but you've seen like pipe smoking in this generation going up. You've seen like chewing tobacco going up, things that just, I think people want something tangible. And there's obviously the little bit of the hipster effect. They want to kind of do some things that their grandparents did, but you are seeing a lot of the trends with this generation being trends that you would have seen much more likely with their grandparents than their parents or their, you know, hipster early 90s older brother.
Yeah, although, you know, it may be that it's just that the trends are changing. Like in the 50s, you know, you had marksmanship leagues. That was common. And you still have it now. But now you've got, you know, things like three gun exploding in popularity. So it's not that people are necessarily doing things differently than they did in the past, but they're doing the same things that they did in the past with a little bit with their own twist. Right. Because every generation finds its own a way to, right. to influence culture. And so I think that's what we're seeing here with gun culture 2.0. You're seeing a lot more competitive shooting, or not necessarily a lot more, but you're seeing it show up in different areas. I think you are seeing a greater interest in hunting. And I think it's for that, that sort of, in some cases, Stephen, as you said, that sort of, desire why we see pipe smoking, right? We want to go back to that lifestyle. There's also the foodie, influence where we want to know where our food comes from. And it's sort of, right. You know, in some ways it's hip, to be a hunter and to take your own meat and to take it from, you know, the forest to your table. So I think there are, as you say,
I might do it for the first time and I'll admit I've never done it before. I shot a squirrel once when I was a kid with a BB gun and I felt terrible. I have no interest in killing deer, but my uncle runs a cider mill in Northern Michigan and the deer are what are the language rules here?
Try and avoid the seven words that.
Carl okay. Well, these deer are pricks because they keep eating his cider apples. And so he was like, listen, I have this basically open season pass to kill as many deer as you want. He's like, you could sit here with a handgun in a lawn chair and they're going to come up and they're ruining my orchard. And I know someone who can process it. And I'm sitting there going like, well, now I have a motivation because they're hurting my uncle's business. And wow, wouldn't it be great to know where my meat comes from up there in the pristine woods of northern Michigan, where they're likely to be healthy and naturally grass-fed. And it's something I hadn't even considered before. And I'm not a hippie. I don't necessarily believe in organic food. But I think, like Cam said, that pendulum just sort of shifts. I guess my question is actually, sorry to Cam, since you're an expert on this, you're talking about sort of marksmanship, and now you have three gun. And I was just talking with someone the other day. They're doing this sort of extreme version of cowboy shooting. I don't even know the name, but it's not cowboy shooting. It's on horseback.
Oh, cowboy mounted action shooting.
There was something, some specific subset that was really difficult. I don't know. I'll have to find the name, because I followed cowboy action shooting for a while. Was there a waning of it? I would imagine in the 90s to early 2000s, I would imagine it was maybe less mainstream for a portion with the Columbine and the assault weapons ban, or am I wrong about that?
You know, I mean, you're getting back to before I was really a gun owner. So I don't have firsthand, you know, experience with what it was like. I do think that there's been continual growth. So I think you're right that, you know, there weren't as many people engaged in, you know, the competitive shooting and all its varieties. But, you know, again, we've also seen, like, gun culture 2.0 is not just one culture, right? There's no monoculture of gun ownership. As you said, you know, you've got people who belong to SAS, the Single Action Shooting Society, and they, you know, dress up in their Wild West gear, and they've got these really cool competitions that are like sort of like a cross between, you know, your shooting competition and like a Renaissance fair, but set in the Wild West, to, you know, the three gun, the long range tactical pistol, tactical rifle. You've got IPSC, you've got steel targets, you've got people who are still competing in postal leagues. I mean, there's no shortage of ways to compete. And then you get into the shotgun sport. I mean, like, you know, there's so many different ways to be involved in the shooting sports. In fact, it's fascinating that we've done a couple of stories over the past year or so about the explosion of popularity for trap shooting in high schools, because this is something that is, you know, it's relatively easy for a high school to come up with a rifle team. You partner with the local range. It's a sport where, you know, no kid's sitting on the bench, right? No one, you don't have to be the one of the top five players to get on the court. You are competing against yourself. I think there were over 7,500 athletes who took part in the Minnesota State High School Trap Shooting Championships last spring. It is the fastest growing sport in Minnesota right now. And, you know, again, I mean, when a shooting sport is one of the fastest growing sports in America, shouldn't be surprising that millennials are going to have a healthy pro-gun attitude.
I actually have to probably stop making fun of millennials if they're all going to be packing. So, you know, to anyone who's like digging through old tweets where I called millennials like a garbage generation, I'm just kidding.
They are, though.
I'm a Generation Xer. I know not what I say.
Well, can we ask this, or how old are you, Brodigan?
I'll be 41 in April.
Really?
Surprise!
I had no idea. Did you know how old Brodigan was, not gay Jared? 41. He just said, "What the?" So we had no idea. You look young. I don't know. I don't know what your beard is covering.
As someone who just turned 41 back in August, Brodigan, I can tell you it's not bad.
No, I'm enjoying it so far. I'm looking forward to my midlife crisis setting in.
Well, you've started the starting strength protocol, and you said even so, you're doing good. You're healthy.
Yes, instead of getting a convertible, because, like, you know, that's a couple years down the road. I'm just becoming a gym freak.
There you go, and you do the kickboxing. So good for you. Just next thing, get yourself a firearm. Cam can probably recommend something, but
well, actually, segue. Speaking of trying to get myself a firearm. I keep on hearing these things about these gun show loopholes, and I was thinking of going to a gun show and exploiting one so I could actually purchase a firearm. Apparently, it's so easy to do. And I understand, Crowder, you have experience with that.
Yeah, Cam can maybe clarify. In New York, I don't think there's any chance whatsoever.
No.
The closest thing is there are in some states, like Texas or Indiana, if you live within state, you can buy it from a private – it's a private firearm sale. Usually, that's between, like, a father and son or someone who's getting rid of their collections. But we did a video on that where people, they use the term gun show loophole. What they're really talking about is private sales that almost never occur, and virtually, statistically, 0% of firearm incidents or shootings occur with guns that have been bought through this loophole. There is no gun show loophole. You can't go to a gun show and legally buy a gun from a dealer without a background. And if you're from Illinois, you can't do it at all. If you're from New York, you can't do it at all. The point with this video was just to prove that it is not easy to purchase a firearm. I don't even know in New York. I don't know what the. I knew in New Jersey there was that lady who had to face the waiting period, and her stalker ex-husband killed her. So I can imagine it's not any better in New York.
It's easier if I move upstate, but it's not very good.
Is there a waiting period in New York?
I haven't looked into it. If there wasn't a waiting period after the SAFE Act, probably about 25 years.
Okay. Well, you should probably buy some fire, if only as an investment, not only to protect yourself, but it's better than money. It's the one thing that consistently goes up in value. I mean, you're not going to buy $500,000 in gun stocks, but the point is if you spend X amount in the gun, you can multiply that by 10% probably year over year within 10 years. So it's not finances lost. I would recommend in New York because it's only going to get harder. But yeah, the gun show loophole is non-existent. It's a myth. As a matter of fact, thanks to NRA News for running that. But I also think that's so important why Ted Cruz is talking about the Supreme Court right now. We talked about this in the video with the Keller decision. What's more important than the arguments for it was a 5-4 decision that said people have the right to bear arms. What's more important than the arguments that led to us having the right to own firearms is the arguments against it. You know, it wasn't, well, people have the right to own firearms except for this kind of capacity or these kinds of assault weapons. The only legal argument that could be made in the Supreme Court, the only legal acceptable dissenting argument was that American citizens have no right to own firearms whatsoever, and it's left the municipality or judge or sheriff to decide, oh, I'll grant you the right to own a firearm. So it's important for people to know that. To rule against what we have now as the current interpretation of the Second Amendment is to say that nobody in the United States has the human right to protect themselves. And that's important.
Absolutely. We were talking about the Heller decision yesterday on the program because Antonin Scalia authored the majority opinion. And we were going through some of the language that he used.
Wait, I say Keller?
I think you did. Did you?
Well, I was thinking of Helen Keller, so I messed it up in my head.
That's Helen starts with an H, so there you go.
Yeah, that's reasonable. Sorry.
Sure. Uh-oh. All right, well, I'll see what I can do here. Maybe I need to drop off and hop back on. Let me try that real quick. You guys talk amongst yourselves for a minute.
All right, we'll talk amongst ourselves. Yeah, sorry, Heller. Helen Keller. I guess there's the one thing about Helen Keller. I mean, obviously you feel bad for her, but what a source for comedy. I mean, anything can be made better with a Helen Keller joke. There we go.
Can you see me now?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Continue.
Yeah, so, we were talking about the decision, it was interesting because Scalia went through, like, every phrase in the Second Amendment and explained what it means to talk about the people, what it means to say keep, what it means to say bear. What do those words mean at the time? You look at the historical background of how we got the Second Amendment, how we got all of the Bill of Rights. You know, there were a lot of Americans who were very concerned that the Constitution was too open-ended, that it gave the federal government way too much power, and a number of states said, we're not going to ratify this until we get explicit protections for some of our rights. The preamble to the Bill of Rights talks about this. Madison in Federalist, I think it's Federalist 41, talks specifically about the right to keep and bear arms, how the monarchs or the kings and queens of Europe don't trust the people with arms. And yet, he said that this would be a check on a tyrannical power developing here because you would have 500...
I think we lost him, Brodigan.
Yeah, sorry about that, fellas.
It's okay.
Anyway, you know, you would have that check. He used the phrase, or he used the number 500,000 Americans who would be capable of bearing arms under state militias if a federal tyranny, whatever, was developed. At that point, 500,000 people, that's, you know, half of the country in terms of, you know, the number of people who were capable of bearing arms. He was obviously talking about widespread gun ownership.
Today, that's half of Traverse City.
Right? I mean, well, right now we've got 13 million concealed carry holders. So, you know, Americans, despite the objections of anti-gun advocates, Americans, I think, by and large, we do understand what the Second Amendment is all about. We do understand what our rights are for.
And right. Actually, I want to backtrack to Cam, a point you made before when you're talking about, besides like the rise in like gun ownership and hunting and smoking a pipe and manly things. I know your friends on Cosmo. which of course, you know, is our favorite periodical, released a video about how
all they do is write about periodicals.
Funny as hell, but they recently had a video and an article about how women shouldn't date men who carry guns because they're gunsplaining, because apparently that's a new thing, is where you put the word splain after a noun and you don't have to listen to people's arguments. And I understand, Cam, that you took exception to that.
Well, no, I'm a gunsplainer. I'm listed. I'm actually a gunsplainer according to Cosmopolitan and Everytown for Gun Safety. So they took exception to me. Or perhaps they found me exceptional.
In that case, congratulations, because again, had I ever prepared for these shows, I would have known that.
That's all right. So they took a quote from about a year ago. I think it was March of 2015, in which I said, and there are some ellipses here. I said, if you are the victim of an attack, it is not up to your attacker. The burden of stopping that attack is not on the person committing the crime. The burden of stopping that attack at that moment in time is on the victim. It's on the victim. And I was responding to an op-ed at the University of North Carolina student newspaper that was opposed to campus carry. And the author of this piece said that one of her objections was that it would further burden a rape victim with her self-defense. So I was making the point that, you know, look, that burden, like it or not, is on the person who's being attacked. You cannot expect the person attacking you to suddenly develop a moral compass, to have a change of heart. You can't expect the police to magically arrive in time to stop that attack. Now, it doesn't mean that you will always be able to act in self-defense. It doesn't mean that using a firearm would even be the most appropriate response. But it does mean that you have a right to defend yourself, and you should try to do that. Frankly, I'm stunned that Cosmopolitan and Everytown took this quote and are now trying to claim that I'm victim blaming. I mean, it's absurd. It's ridiculous.
The other thing is that's like generally what you just said sounds like perfect common sense, because you're not even specifying a female victim, just victims in general. And it's being taken out of context, and you're being called like, you know, a terrible human being with no like redeemable value by people who think you should defend yourself by peeing on yourself.
But here's the thing. Even if that's their advice, that, you know, you should pee yourself, you should use a tongue depressor, try to vomit on your attacker, they're still talking about self-defense. They're still talking about the same thing that I was. They're just talking about a different means of self-defense. But that's the argument. They're saying that if you are advocating or encouraging self-defense, that all of a sudden you are victim blaming. Now, I need more gunsplanation about this, because I don't understand how advocating in favor of self-defense means that you are victim, that you're blaming victims of violent crime.
Well, you both are. You're both advocating self-defense. You're advocating the Velociraptor approach of tearing your assailant up, and they're advocating the Dilophosaurus and vomiting and urinating all over their assailant. That's the big thing, is they all want to act as though they're nonviolent. There is nobody who's nonviolent who's being raped or who's being assaulted. If they had the capability to be violent, they would be violent. That's the reality of the situation. And that's something too, where I was talking, my wife and I were talking about this, how sometimes you just have a conversation with somebody, Cam, and Brodigan and I have talked about this a lot too. You have to recognize the people whose minds you can change and the people who are doing the manipulating of those whose minds you can change. The people who are doing the manipulating, the James Camerons, the Sean Penns, the Hillary Clintons, you have to make an example of them, because they're not going to change their mind. They're so far down the trail. They don't even have a breadcrumb trail to find their way back. You have to make an example of them so that you can change the minds of people who can. And they want to use the term gunsplaining, mansplaining. What's it? Is white splaining a thing, or is it just white privilege, Brodigan?
I think both.
I think both.
Basically, if it's something liberals don't like and it flows to put the word splain after it,
right,
it counts.
Well, the point is, the person who would say white splaining, that person you make an example and point out how silly and unintelligent they are, because the person who's going, what's white splaining, who might be a liberal, can be convinced. And you need to learn to handle the two in a different way. And I think that's sort of the irony, like you were saying, of Lauder with Crowder. People sort of picture it as a Rush Limbaugh on steroids. And actually, it's a little more thoughtful and it's a little bit more informative. We try to be, because we have a lot of listeners and viewers who aren't really conservative, who are more sort of anti-authoritarian left, who have opened their minds now a little bit because they've realized just how close-minded the left is. And the truth is there is no non-violent leftist in the case of rape. If someone is being raped, if someone is about to be murdered, if they had the ability to violently defend themselves, they would. And that comes back to the basic right of self-preservation. That's what the Second Amendment is about.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Okay, so we are getting ready to wrap up, but before I get closing thoughts, and again, this falls under where if I prepared for these shows, I would have thought to ask you, Cam, about this before the show. I noticed your book over your right shoulder. Hey, would you like to tell us about it?
Hey, sure. So yes, this came out back in October. It's called Heavy Lifting, Grow Up, Get a Job, Start a Family, and Other Manly Advice, co-authored with Jim Garrity of National Review. Basically just, you know, using our personal stories of growing up, getting a job, starting a family, and all of the other manly things that we've done. It's kind of a tongue-in-cheek title, but we are sort of pushing back against that idea of eternal adolescence and, you know, the idea that you don't want a wife, you don't want a family. These are just obligations. These are burdens. We're trying to present the point of view that actually, no, being a dad, being a husband, it's the best thing that could ever happen to you.
I would like to read that because that's true. You know, I'm someone who has I've caught a lot of flack. I just like Boughton. I don't know how I made that. I said Keller. I said I've screwed up so many times. I just came. Yeah. I've just come back from all kinds of doctor's meetings. For those who don't know, I blew out ligaments in my knee. So I'm not entirely myself. I would love to read that, Cam, because I've written columns about sort of actually waiting until marriage sexually or talking about how men need to grow up. Because the thing is, I hate feminism. But I hate feminism often because it lets bad men off the hook as well. And I believe that we should hold men accountable and put them on the hook. Men should grow up and be good husbands. Men should grow up and be good fathers. Men should take responsibility. So you can't reject feminism and then reject the very things that make it so abhorrent in the idea of, I guess, sort of complementarianism, that men have a fundamental role that is your responsibility to fulfill. And I feel like with the Gamergate community, with even the gun culture 2.0 community, a lot of them sort of, they're sort of like feminists. They want to take the good and leave the bad. Listen, if you hate feminism and you want to be a manly man, it doesn't just come down to burping and drinking and farting. It comes down to being a father, a husband, and instilling those values in your kids emotionally, physically, spiritually. It's like Teddy Roosevelt talked about, strenuous life. It's a holistic approach to manliness. I would love to read that, Cam. Maybe in a private email you can send me something.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll email you and get your address, and I'll get you a copy.
Have you read Wild at Heart? Is that a book that you're a fan of?
You know, I don't think I have read Wild at Heart.
I don't know. You've read that, not Gay Jared. Is it Eldridge? I don't know. It's a great book about sort of the psyche of male. It's written from a Christian perspective, so I don't know where you line up on that. But it's about sort of the psyche of the male and how, since the beginning of time, certain inherent needs and compulsions he needs to fulfill.
John Eldridge.
Okay, so it was John Eldridge. Yeah, I highly recommend that. So if it's anything along those lines, man, those are the kinds of books that are right up my alley. I'll read them voraciously.
Awesome. Appreciate the recommendation.
Well, and before we let you guys go, just go around the table. Crowder, we'll start with you. Closing thoughts. Where can we find you? What are you up to? Yada, yada, and yada.
LouderWithCrowder.com. You go there. You can read the stories every day. It's a new site, but we also have a podcast that's available on iTunes, SoundCloud, or YouTube. Rodigan makes regular appearances. And listen, if you hate me, tweet me at S. Crowder, and I'll be sure to tell you to piss off.
Mr. Edwards.
So I am gunsplaining each and every weekday live from 2 to 5 Eastern on NRANews.com with NRA News Cam and Company. You can also find us midnight Eastern, 9 Pacific on SiriusXM and Patriot 125, on demand at iHeartRadio. And we have an NRA News Roku channel as well now. So it's not just NRA News Cam and Company, but you can get all kinds of NRA News programming. I'm at Cam Edwards on Twitter. So, you can email me or tweet me and, criticize me, and I'll refer you to Steven Crowder.
Well, that has been the most ammunition-heavy episode of the Every Joe podcast. You can find us on everyjoe.com. For Crowder, for Cam, for mystery producer Aaron, and for Brandon Moore, through whom all things are possible. Hope you enjoyed it. Go join the NRA, pick up a gun, pick up Cam's book. Peace.